My assignment this month was the reasons for the collection. I'm going to take a little different view on this, probably. We all know that what contributions to the church are for. We know the church. The church has bills and the church has obligations. We also know from the teachings of the Bible that we are the ones as members of the church that are responsible to give of our means so that the church might operate and might be successful in its mission. And there are several different missions that the church is responsible for. It's our job. But I'm going to look at it just a little bit further this morning or this evening in a little different way, because I believe that when you begin to look at the collections from a biblical viewpoint, really, the collections that we give as members of the Church of Christ are really much deeper and much greater and much more important than simply giving enough so that the church can pay its bills. Matthew 6:21 says, "For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also." These are the words of Jesus Christ. And it's upon this thought that I am building my lesson this afternoon. As I studied this, as I researched this, I found seven reasons that I want to talk about tonight. Seven reasons why it is important to give, and biblical reasons why we're to give to the Lord what is expected of us as Christians, and why people, as the Apostle Paul, should give not grudgingly and not give because they were forced to, but to give generously of their income for the work of the church. And there are consequences for not, and there are also advantages when we give as the Bible commands us to do. Number one is that giving honors an Old Testament principle. Now, in the Old Testament, they were to tithe. A tithe was 10% of their income, 10% of their flock. If they made $100, 10 of it belonged back to God, and they had to give it back. It was a 10% figure that people still use today to kind of determine how much should be given in the gospel, given by a Christian, given back to the church. But the 10% tithing was not brought forward in the New Testament. We're not commanded to give 10%. So this was not brought forward, but we were commanded as Christians to give as we prosper and to give as we purpose in our heart and to give generously back to the Lord. But tithing is an Old Testament principle, and it's the way that God set up so that the ministers under the Old Testament would then their expenses would be paid for by the children of Israel. There were 12 tribes of Israel. 11 of them were given land and an inheritance in the promised land. One of them, the tribe of Levi, was given no inheritance. But they were in fact told that their responsibility, their job was to handle the spiritual needs of the rest of the children of Israel, and that the 11 tribes then would tithe or give what they had, and they would give it to the tribe of Levi. So Levites were the tribe of Levi had the responsibility of the spiritual growth of the children of Israel. And the rest of them were to give so that this could be done. In Numbers 18:21, God said to Aaron, "You have no inheritance in the land nor any portion among them." And he said, "I have given all the tithe of Israel for an inheritance in return for their service, which they performed, the service of the tent meeting." Today's evangelists are also to be paid out of the church treasury. Now, when we give of our means today, we are honoring an Old Testament concept or a principle that was found there. Preachers of the gospel are to be paid for and are to be paid and are to receive their living out of the treasury of the church. That means while some of us are gainfully employed and we make money, it is our obligation as Christians that we give some of our money back so that those that have dedicated themselves to the spiritual needs of the congregation would be able to be paid. It's part of the cost of the ministry. And this is exactly what was done in the Old Testament. But God laid down this commandment that they were to tithe. It was to pay for the cost of the ministry. Jesus, I believe, in the New Testament continued this principle. He said in Matthew 23:23, speaking to the scribes and Pharisees, "Woe unto you, you tithe mint and dill and cumin, but have neglected the weightier provisions of the law." These are things that should have been done without neglecting the other. I believe that Jesus endorsed giving, following after this pattern of tithing, and that Christians were to give back to the church, just as the Old Testament, they were to give back into the work of the 12 tribes, because someone has to be responsible for spiritual training. And I think Jesus is saying here, don't neglect this, that is your duty and your responsibility. In 1 Corinthians 9, verses 13 and 14, Paul says, do you not know that those who perform sacred services in the temple eat the food of the temple, and those that attend regularly to the altar or the sacrifice of the temple have their share with the altar? In other words, Paul said the Levites that worked in the temple and had the responsibility for spiritual edification of the group lived off of the temple and lived off of the tithes that were given. And then it continues in verse 14 of this. So also the Lord directed those who proclaimed the gospel to get their living from the gospel. Paul is saying if you spend your life in the spiritual training of the group, if this is your dedicated job, then you need to be supported by the Christians. You need to be supported by the church. And even though this was mandated under the old law to give 10%, it was not brought forward as a 10% gift or a 10% offering in the New Testament, but it was given as a spiritual guideline. And when we give of our means generously, as the Bible tells us, we honor a principle and a plan of God that sustained the Old Testament and also sustains the New Testament way of teaching as well. Number one, we honor an old principle. Number two, we honor God and God Almighty as the creator of everything and as the owner of everything. God created everything. Everything belongs to God. Our income belongs to God. All of our money belongs to God. All of our possessions belong to God. Everything belongs to God. We brought nothing into this world, and we will take absolutely nothing out. Or as David said in Psalms 24 and 1, the earth is the Lord's and all it contains, the world and all who dwell in it. God is the creator and the owner of everything. And what we do with our portion of money that God gives us to live on and to exist with and to sustain ourselves with, what we do with this money speaks volumes as to our view that we have and our responsibility to God. A few years that we're able to spend here on earth using this wealth that God has put in our possession, what we do with this wealth really makes a great statement on what we believe about God himself. And God is wise, and he knows what we're doing, and he knows what we're doing with our money, and he knows what our needs are. And he expects us to give generously back a portion of that he has given unto us. In the Old Testament, he said, set the Sabbath day aside and keep it holy. What he's saying here is I'm giving you 7 days. 6 days work. 6 days provide for yourself. The seventh day I want you to give it back to me. This is my day. God says you got all seven of them, but one of these you give back because one of these is mine. And I think the same principle runs here. He says everything I own, I'm letting you use. Everything you own is mine. He said, use it, but I want a part of it back. When we give a portion of our income, it does not deny that the money that we own belongs to God, but we do admit that we realize it belongs to God and we're giving part of it. We are in effect saying, this part I'm giving back to you, God, in a special way, in an offering, because we know in an ordinary way, everything belongs to you. It all belongs to God. He's letting us use it. But he expects us to use what we need and to give some of it back to him and to give it back generously so that we can make the affirmation in our mind that we know what belongs to God. And when we make that deposit, when we receive that check, we need to realize that a percentage of this has to go back to God. This is kind of the seal that we put on it that we know that we must give back. Number three. And this is where it kind of gets off in left field, I guess, but I think this is a very important fact, and I believe it fits, and I believe it's part of what we're commanded about to give. To give generously back to God is an antidote to covetousness. The last of the Ten Commandments is, thou shalt not covet. Jesus said in Luke 12 and 15, beware and to be on your guard against every form of covetousness or greed. Colossians 3 and 5, Paul refers to covetousness as idolatry. If we give back to the Lord as we have been commanded to give, generously and not grudgingly, it is an antidote to covetousness. And covetousness in our world today, in our society, is wanting too much. And it can be very dangerous to our soul. Hebrews 13:5 says, let your character be free from the love of money, being content with what you've got. Now let's kind of break this down and look at it. Every time you give to the Lord a certain amount of money, whatever it is, this is money that you're taking out of your bank account or out of your pocket, and you're giving it to the Lord. When you give it to the Lord, that means that you do not have the use of that money. To give is not to buy. To give to the Lord is not to covet. And in our society today, in a capitalistic society, it is important that we realize that covetousness is amongst us all the time, and we must fight covetousness every day. And the antidote to being covetous is giving. Is it for God or is it for self? And Jesus said, wherever your treasure is, that's where your heart is. Wherever you are, whatever is most important to you, that is what is important to you. Giving back to God, giving something that we have, giving it to God, keeps us from being able to do what we want to do with it. It is selflessness, and it is also an antidote to covetousness or to greed. The fourth reason falls somewhat in line with this, but it really expands on it even more. When we give to the Lord, as we should be giving to the Lord generously, it puts the governor on our ever-expanding spending. Spending expands to fill the income. There was a book written several years ago. It's called Getting By on $100,000 a Year. And the conclusion of this book was, the more you make, the more you buy, and the more you buy, the more you store and repair and insurance. Spending begets spending. If you have less at your disposal, you have less to spend. I don't worry or even think about world luxurious cruises and all of the many wonderful things that our new president can do, because I don't have the money to do it. There's no reason for me to even think about it. But were I a rich person like this, then I would spend more time thinking of some of the many luxurious things that I can do. Expenses invariably expand to fill the income. We have more money. We spend more money on stuff. We accumulate more stuff. And the more expensive stuff that we accumulate is the more that we insure and we pair and we take care of and we worry about. So the answer is, as our income grows, our giving ought to also grow. Giving a greater percentage of our income to advance the kingdom, this in fact puts the brakes on the impulse that we have in our capitalistic society toward luxury. To give you an example, and I read this online, so I want to share it with you. It's talking about John Wesley. John Wesley was born in 1703, and in 1731, he actually began his ministry and began to do the things that he was doing. And in 1731, he was paid 30 pounds, English pounds, English money. That was his annual salary. So John Wesley determined that he could live on 28 pounds. That's all he needed to survive. So he had lived on 28 pounds. He gave 2 of these pounds to the poor. In year 2, he earned 60 pounds per year. Instead of a 30, he doubled his income. He continued to live on 28, which gave him 32 pounds to give away in the things that he was doing. The next year, it was 90, so he gave away 62 pounds. It got up to one point, that top of his life, he was making 1,400 pounds a year. He realized that he could still live on 30 pounds a year. So everything that he got over the 30 pounds was given back to the ministry that he was promoting and given to the poor. It said that he seldom had more than 100 pounds in his possession at any time. And when he died in 1791 at the age of 87, the only wealth that John Wesley had was the coins that was in his pocket and in his dresser. And more than 30,000 pounds had been given away. He said, if I can keep a control on my spending for the sake of Christ, then I can give more back to Christ, and I am building and putting my treasures in heaven instead of on earth. The last three reasons for moving and giving of our means, as we have been commanded to do, comes from 2 Corinthians 9, verses 6 through 8. Paul said here, he that soweth sparingly shall reap sparingly, and he that soweth bountifully shall reap bountifully. Every man according as he purposed in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly, or of necessity, for God loveth the cheerful giver. And God is able to make all grace abound toward you, that ye, always having all sufficiency in all things, may abound to every good work. Here's what Paul said. You sow sparingly, you're going to reap sparingly. You sow bountifully, you're going to reap bountifully. He said, give as you purpose in your heart. Give not grudgingly, and don't give because you are forced or have to give by compulsion, but give back to God cheerfully and generously. And it said, God can take what you have given and provide you with sufficiency in everything so that there may be an abundance of all good deeds. And I think the key here is abundance in all good deeds. Now, your televangelist will tell you today that if you'll give and send them a check, that you are going to get all sorts of money and everybody's going to be rich and everybody's going to be prosperous. You need to give as much as you can to them and then expect the gifts to come in. And that's not at all what Paul is preaching here. He said that there would be sufficiency, but there would be an abundance given in good gifts. So the fifth reason for bringing about and giving to God as we should do is because it brings about many good deeds for His glory. At the end of verse 8, Paul said, you shall have an abundance for every good deed. So the goal here is good deeds. Excess money is for good deeds. Excess money is to make your light shine. Excess money that is given is to give glory to your Father. Excess money is to lay up treasures in heaven as opposed to laying treasures up on earth. If we just give stingily, or if we don't give, then our treasures are on earth and we look just like everyone else looks. Titus 2 and 13 said, Christ died to purify for himself a people who are zealous for good works. 2 Corinthians 9 and 8 says that the aim of material bounty is for every good deed. And verse 11 says, you will be enriched in everything for all liberality. Excess money that we have is given so that we can give it to the Lord to show exactly where our treasure is. So our fifth thing here is that giving back to the Lord is God's way to provide for us to have good works and to lay up our treasures in heaven. The sixth reason is that with sufficient money and the money that we give back, that God will provide for our needs. God knows what we need. He knows what it takes to get along. He knows what it takes to pay our bills. He knows what it takes to survive. God will provide sufficiently for our needs. He who sows bountifully shall reap bountifully. Then verse 8 said, God is able to make all grace abound to you, that always having all sufficiency. In Malachi, the third chapter and verse 10, speaking to the old covenant people, speaking about giving, Malachi said, bring the whole tithe, your giving, back to God. Bring the whole tithe into the storehouse so that there may be food in my house. And test me now in this, says the Lord of hosts, if I will not open for you the windows of heaven and pour out a blessing until it overflows. Now this is a challenge that God has issued to these old people. He said, give to me as you're supposed to give back to me. He said, test me. Test me. You think you can't afford to give? God says, test me. And I'm going to teach you that you can't afford not to give. Luke 6 and 38 said, give and it will be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, that will pour into your lap. God has promised us an abundance of good work and a sufficiency that is needed for our living. And finally, reason number 7. Is that when we give generously back to God as we are told to give, it proves and strengthens our faith in God and the promises of God. There is a correlation between faith and the promises of God, between peace of mind and the giving away of what we have that we give back to God. Or we can conclude that in Hebrews 13 and 5, it says, let your character be free from the love of money, be content with what you have, because Jesus said, I will never desert you, nor will I ever forsake you. So the teaching here that we get in this seventh one is that if we doubt that we can live on the income that we have left after we give our gift unto God, God says, give your portion to me as I have commanded you, test me, and then depend upon me to provide for your sufficiency and to strengthen your faith. Or, as Paul says in Philippians 4:19, my God shall supply all of your needs according to his riches and glory in Jesus Christ. So to conclude all of this in a sentence, our giving to God as we have been told to give without compulsion, generously, happily, boils down to a faith issue. Do we trust God? Do we see him as the owner of all things? Do we trust in his promises? God, he says, will survive, will supply all of our needs. God says, if you give to me, I will bless you abundantly in good deeds. Your treasure will be in heaven and not on earth. And he says, I will supply for the sufficiency of your needs. Giving in the church is a whole lot more than just paying the bills. I thought this was pretty interesting. I thought it was some good lessons here, and I hope that maybe we've learned something. Let's have a song of invitation. If we can help you, come forward as we sing.